And our leaders are low-life scum that screw little girls so the Jews can screw America. That's what's happening in this country. I just said it. That's what's going on in this country. And our FBI is corrupt. The Supreme Court is corrupt. The Justice Department is corrupt. The news media is corrupt. The whole country is corrupt. Because we've walked away from Almighty God and we've allowed Kabbalah practicing Jews to defile the nation. Put that video out. Go ahead and clip this video and send it out. I dare you. You won't do it because you're scared that the truth may get out to the American people. I'm had it up to here with the corruption in this country. Little children being raped for the benefit of Israel. That's all it's about, Doc. Little American children being raped for the benefit of Israel. American politicians raping little American girls to be videotaped by Israeli Mossad so that Israel can blackmail American politicians. That's the state of America today. God ought to destroy this country for what we've become.
And that guy is totally correct, folks. That is who runs the United States. And that's how it's run. I mean, the United States is pretty much a vassal state of Israel. And that's how it's run. An interesting thing as well is that every person who was on Epstein's client list is still out there doing what they're doing, folks, every one of them. Not one single person has been arrested. Now, all of the focus put on his flight list and who traveled on the Lolita Express is simply a distraction. It doesn't really matter who traveled on the aircraft out to his island. What matters is who went to his building in Manhattan, because all of those people are compromised and they're all still in power. I'm here at the Sea Organ in Zadar. You see down here on the footpath, they've got all these little holes in the footpath. There's probably a little bit of wind noise, but all these holes in the footpath all get air coming in from the waves, and they play these organ sounds. You can probably hear the organ sounds at the moment. And this is the Sea Organ that was done by a particular architect whose name escapes me. But quite remarkable, folks. The waves are literally playing a tune for you, which is amazing. Can you hear that? Quite remarkable, eh? I don't know how long I'll stay down here because I think it's getting a little windy and that's probably annoying you. But this is quite remarkable, this Sea Organ. Like these old mooring posts as well. These old iron mooring post I've got. This old seawall over here, that used to be actually the ocean wall before the war, and they built all this stuff after the war. Pretty incredible. Zadar, Croatia. Beautiful place, folks, really beautiful place. But I think I might walk through the portal now and come out in a different area. Let's just see how that goes. So yeah, folks, now we're in a park in Zadar. It's a nice place, Zadar. It's got some really nice areas. So yeah, look, the world's continuing to go crazy, folks. What can I say? I mean, I even wonder, doing these videos for you, I mean, it would be so nice to just come and talk about something positive. It would be nice to still be talking about Tartaria and ancient history and all the stuff that I used to talk about. But really, we're in a state of clear and present danger, and I kind of feel guilty even going onto those topics. I mean, we're really at a stage where people need to pay attention, folks. They really absolutely need to pay attention. I mean, look what's come out in the last few weeks. You know, AstraZeneca admitting that their jab is killing people and being pulled from the market. Right on cue as well. I mean, for all the people who've been saying that, oh, you know, we're conspiracy theorists, it should show you just how wrong they were. Should show them anyway just how wrong they were. We actually nailed it right back in the beginning. And we tried to tell people not to take the jab, but well, they took it anyway. And look at the result. Pretty drastic stuff. Really beautiful here, don't you think, folks? It is a really, really nice area. But yeah, the world's going nuts. They're bringing in facial recognition all over the place, still trying to get rid of cash all over the place. Bring in biometric scanning in Australia. They want to bring in biometrics for everything. There's actually a area in Canada now, I think it's an island, and they've actually put QR codes in place, so you've got to get your own QR code, and you've got to have a QR code, you've got to scan a QR code or something like that, in order to leave this place.
So for those of you who are on social media, I'm sure you've seen the post that's gone viral about Madalena Island getting QR codes in order to leave. And if you don't get your QR code, you will be fined. Guess what, guys? That's the very first QR code prison here in Canada. And it is going to sweep the nation faster than you can think if people don't stand up and take a stand against these QR codes. It's not happening in your town yet, but it most certainly will be. We know the government's expropriating land from farmers all over the place. We know that they are trying to make military presence a normality. So it's only a matter of time before you are trading away your information, your private information, in a QR code in order to leave your town or city so that you can go to work, shop, get an education, or just plain out visit and travel this amazing country. Time to stand up and wake up and use your voice.
Yeah, that's your first 15-minute city, your first QR code digital prison has just been created in Canada. Next level stuff, folks. Next level stuff. They're rushing it through in Queensland as well, the e-safety bill, which is really about keeping the politicians safe from the people. It's not about keeping you safe, not about keeping anybody safe. It's about limiting what you can say online. Anything that questions the narrative, anything that they conceive to be or that they label disinformation, is of course dangerous for people. It's dangerous to think outside the box, folks. It's dangerous to think anything that the government didn't approve of. That's the way they're pushing it. That's the way they're pushing it in Canada as well. Canada and Australia are really leading the way with all of this digital bullshit. And it's starting to show now. It's really starting to show. They're removing cash all over the place, making it more and more difficult. There's actually a group in Australia now called the Aligned Council of Australia, which is a group of individuals who are sort of trying to address this problem, which is good to see. I mean, I don't know. I don't trust too many groups, folks. And hopefully this one will be people of integrity, but you just never know. You never know. When everyone sort of creates a group and creates some sort of a movement, it generally gets co-opted, which is the problem. But hopefully this Aligned Council of Australia won't be like that. Hopefully it's people with genuine concerns who are going to attempt to take some kind of genuine action. That would be good. Cool little place here, eh, folks? Cool little area. Cool little park. Just a good space. But there's a company, an Australian company, called Out of the Box. And it has been correlating biometric data, storing people's biometric data. And it got hacked the other day. And so that just kind of shows you how dangerous all this stuff is. People are saying how secure everything is and blah, blah, blah. And then this out-of-the-box company gets hacked and everyone's biometric data goes out there, and it's got complete with signatures and driver's license and home addresses and everything people need to actually completely steal your identity. And that got hacked the other day, which shows you just how dangerous this is. I mean, it's good that this is happening, because then people are seeing just how dangerous all this is and what the government is leading them into. It's crazy. As I speak, of course, as I'm doing this report, Rafah in Gaza is being literally carpet-bombed, folks. The tent cities in Rafah, where they told everyone to shelter to flee for shelter, for safety, the safe zone. They're now bombing the shit out of it, claiming they've got to do so to remove the final four battalions of Hamas. Which, of course, is complete and utter bullshit. They're not interested in removing any Hamas battalions. They're interested in killing as many Palestinians as they can, which is exactly what they've been doing.
Today was a very difficult day. Trauma, cases, burns, explosions, people mutilated, cut down, shrapnel, bullets, bombs, children dying, children being maimed. People are terrified.
I don't know if you can hear that buzzing sound. The constant buzz of the drones. Fill the night sky.
Terrify these people. This is like a psychological warfare as much as it is physical. Any other nation on earth would not be allowed to do what these people do. Why can we not stop this? I don't understand. Why can the world not get together and put an end to this slaughter? Because it is simply a slaughter. Please, help. These are beautiful people. They do not deserve this. I don't know what to say to everybody who might be watching this or hearing this. You have to speak up wherever you are. You must become more active, become more forceful. We have a disaster of
unfathomable scale waiting to happen has already happened. And please, you need to help people understand that they feel that the time is nearing. And a lot of people don't know what to do other than to really accept their fate that they will be killed. That is horrific. And I know that my presence here is reassuring for them. It makes them feel safe because they think that so long as I am here, they cannot be killed. And that's a huge responsibility and something that is difficult to digest because now I feel that I cannot leave.
It's just crazy, folks. I've been finding mass graves all over the place. Mass graves in Najir, mass graves in the city of Nasta, mass graves outside Al-Shifa Hospital in Rafah. Just horrendous stuff, folks. Finding graves of headless bodies and then graves of just heads. Really, really terrible stuff. And of course, tomorrow, which will be the day that this video actually goes out online, and maybe it'll be up just before midnight, but tomorrow is May 15th, which is of course Nakba Day, Al-Nakba, the day of the great catastrophe, where in 1948, Israel expelled 750,000 Palestinians from their homes and created the slaughter that they're continuing now. What we're seeing in Gaza over the last 7 months has been far worse than what happened during the Nakba. They dropped 75,000 bombs in 200 days on Gaza Strip. This is more bombs than the United States dropped on Iraq in 6 years of warfare. 75,000 bombs, folks. Yeah, and they're claiming they're not targeting civilians. We had David Cameron the other day urging the BBC to refer to Hamas as a terrorist organisation, when really Hamas isn't the terrorist organisation in this case. The terrorist organisation is the rogue state of Israel, which is in itself a terrorist state. Just going by its own actions, folks, it's a terrorist state, and it should be pretty obvious to everybody that it is. It's absolutely absurd what's been going on. The US has paused bomb shipments, and now Biden's being told he's a traitor to his country and all sorts of shit for pausing bomb shipments to Israel. And pausing bomb shipments, they're still supplying them with logistics, they're still supplying aircraft. You know, they're targeting all these people from Pine Gap in Australia, which is a US base in Australia. So they're all involved. Pausing bomb shipments. It's pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. You've got Zio Trump totally supporting the genocide. All of your governments are totally supporting this genocide, folks. And that's what is so atrocious about it, the fact that it's been supported by so many Western countries. You know, while it's all being done, again, they're pushing all this e-safety shit, all of this AI takeover, all of this smart grid, and also promoting killer robots or creating killer robots.
Probably the most important conference in the world on artificial intelligence is happening right now in Austria. It's about killer robots or autonomous weapon systems, so basically machines that kill people. Over 140 states, experts in technology and artificial intelligence, civil society representatives, are all meeting in Vienna to discuss establishing new rules about developing and using these weapons. This is about the next generation of warfare. Using artificial intelligence, these weapons select and attack targets without human control. So we've already been discussing these weapons at the UN for 10 years without any results. So it's good that this conference is happening, but it has one completely obvious and fatal flaw. They're basically ignoring what's going on in Gaza, where the exact weapons that we've been warning about are being used to commit genocide. Ignoring this is like having a conference against nuclear weapons in 1948 and ignoring the fact that the bombs have just been dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Reports made by Plus 972 and local call show that Israel is using artificial intelligence weapon systems to destroy Gaza. One Israeli agent described it as like a mass assassination factory. The report states that Israeli agents are taking only about 20 seconds to rubber stamp kill decisions. So why is this being ignored at the conference in Vienna? Surely if we're talking about establishing new rules against these weapons, we should look at how the weapons are being used right now in Gaza. Well, here's the problem. The conference is being hosted by Austria. This is a country that has consistently defended Israel at all costs. It was one of the few countries that voted twice at the UN General Assembly against a ceasefire, and their leaders have proudly stood by Israel as it commits genocide. So you've got a state controlling the narrative about these weapons that is best friends with the state that is using these weapons to commit genocide. But there's an even more serious problem. Representatives of civil society are also denying that the weapons being used by Israel are actually autonomous weapon systems. This is a problem because Palestine made a statement at the UN in March calling Israel out for using these weapons for genocide in Gaza.
Israel's use of artificial intelligence has been central to the execution of its mass killings in Gaza. The investigation was based on conversations with seven current and former members of Israel's intelligence community, data and documentation from Gaza, and official statements by the Israeli army spokesperson and other Israeli state institutions.
Israel immediately tried to argue that the systems are not autonomous, so they don't need any regulations.
As a matter of fact, Israel is not using an AI system that autonomously chooses targets for attack without human involvement.
There is an issue about the definition. According to the definition used by Palestine, though, in the proposal they submitted in 2023, these Lavender and Gospel systems should be considered autonomous weapon systems because the human intervention made by the operator is a nominal human input, meaning it was basically mindless. The human didn't properly engage with the consequences of the decision to kill. But instead of agreeing with Palestine, civil society seems to be siding with the Israeli point of view, rejecting the idea that these are autonomous weapon systems, and therefore significantly limiting the definition so that these weapons can actually still be developed and used by militaries around the world. So you've got all of the legal, ethical, security, humanitarian risks that that these weapons are associated with, all happening right now in Gaza, but this is being ignored, and instead there's an attempt to deny that such weapons are being used by Israel. So unfortunately, this is a potentially really serious problem and undermines the effort to prohibit and regulate these weapons, and probably very dangerous for everyone because we know that Israel is selling these weapons around the world. So my advice for states and civil society attending the conference is stop ignoring what's going on in Gaza. Pay more attention to how artificial intelligence is being used to commit genocide, and support the Palestinian proposal that would actually prohibit and regulate these weapons through new international law, which would benefit the whole of humanity.
Isn't that great, folks? Isn't that great? Because you've got to have killer robots, because all their Neuralink trials seem to be failing. The guy who got the first Neuralink chip or whatever, Elon Musk's Neuralink, apparently that's having problems after 100 days.
All right, Elon Musk's startup Neuralink tonight is saying part of its brain-computer chip malfunctioned in this week, after it was first implanted into a patient's brain. 29-year-old Noland Arbaugh became the first person to let Elon Musk's company put a computer chip in his brain back in January. Neuralink, in a blog post, says some of the threads from the device retracted from his brain in the weeks after the procedure. The company did not immediately respond to requests for comment. The technology being developed to help patients with paralysis control things like computer cursors using only their minds. Dr. Natalie Azar is joining us now. Doctor, can you explain the role of these threads in this device and what happened when they apparently retracted in the brain?
Yeah, so basically what happens, Tom, is that a chip is implanted into the brain, and the chip has over 1,000 electrodes that are attached to about 64 of what are called threads. And these threads are essentially programmed to gather what your brain is thinking, basically what kind of movement you intend to do. And that then is sent to a computer. That information is gathered and then it's decoded, and those thoughts are turned into action. So what ostensibly happened is that some of these threads kind of lost their positioning or retracted out of the brain area where they were supposed to be, causing a significant reduction in the speed of this sort of like transformation from these neural intent and these neural thoughts to actual, you know, actionable movement. But they said they corrected it. They said that they sort of tweaked the algorithm and they have it up and running, and this guy is able to do even more than he was able to do before this happened.
You know, the technology is so new here. Is it really any surprise that there's been a complication? Fortunately, he wasn't harmed, right?
Right. And so, I mean, I think people need to understand that the FDA has approved this device for clinical trials. There is no regulatory approval for more widespread commercial use or anything like that. I think it's also important to note that there have been some allegations about some quality control issues with the animal studies that were done prior to this individual being the first human, that had this implanted. And look, complications absolutely can happen, Tom. There can be injection site infections. There can be, rejection even. So these clinical trials need to happen in humans to see that they are safe and effective before broader use and before full FDA approval.
Yeah. Dr. Azar, thank you very much.
Pity about the guy who got the hole drilled in his head and had the Neuralink hooked up to it. Oh, we got some issues here after 100 days. Sorry for drilling a hole in your head. But, yeah, that's the way it goes. This is a beautiful park, hey, folks. Really, really nice. There's a whole bunch of really good areas over there, but the ground is kind of noisy. And you feel it. You hear it anyway on the video. I don't really want to go over there and have you have to listen to the sound of gravel beneath my feet, so I'm walking up here on the hill. What's going on in Gaza, folks? It's absolutely horrendous. While they're carpet bombing Rafah, Benjamin Netanyahu also announced the destruction of 3,500 Palestinian homes in Hebron in the West Bank. The Israeli military went into Hebron. They started removing people at gunpoint at midnight and basically just taking over their homes, bulldozing their homes the next morning and saying this is where Israel is going to build more settlements. Just doesn't stop with these people, folks. It just doesn't stop. Oh, look, you've got LGBTQ trees here by the look of things. That's an interesting addition. Yeah, all this smart grid and everything they're doing, riding off the back of all this. I mean, they want to distract you with Ukraine, distract you with Gaza, distract you with everything, while they're rolling this smart grid out. And honestly, folks, I think they're failing. I really do. I think they're failing. I think the globalists are falling way behind in what they want to do. They've moved too quickly. And the people are noticing it. Of course, the politicians and the media won't tell you that. They'll tell you that everything's peachy. But there's a lot of people speaking out about it now, folks. There's a lot of people who've got the idea of what's going on. And so they've got to keep distracting them with other things. They're telling the young people here in Europe that they need to prepare for war as well. They're claiming that Putin's the bad guy, of course, and they might need to go to battle. Only because NATO and the United States and the UK and all of these criminal entities are pushing for this war to happen. And, you know, and it's all part of the plan, folks. They want this to happen. They want to destroy Western society and build their control grid out of the ashes. That's the plan. And who knows whether they'll get away with it, but I don't think they will. I really don't. I think that their hubris has been too strong and they're going to fail. I think too many people can see what's happening now, folks. I really do. This is, of course, all just predictive programming, folks, because they want to kill more people. If the politicians tell you you need to go to war, tell them you first. Send yourself and your families, and then we might think about it. I mean, some of the stuff that's gone on with Israel, some of the stuff that Israel's done to the Palestinians, like I said, these mass graves, headless bodies. They found a grave of children that were zip-tied, children that had their hands zip-tied behind their backs. Children and babies had their hands zip-tied behind their backs and they were dumped into a mass grave. I mean, this kind of stuff just doesn't sit well with anyone. You know, people who didn't even support Palestine before are now seeing what Israel is capable of and what the Palestinian people have been dealing with for the last 75 years. a lot of people have had enough. I mean, that's why the media's got to portray it as Hamas supporters. Anybody who's speaking out about the crimes of Israel is a Hamas supporter. You're not someone protesting genocide. Oh, no, you're a Hamas supporter. This is the way they've got to play it. It's crazy. But that is the way they play it. But it's not working. That's the thing. It's not working, folks. Too many people are seeing Israel for what it is, and they're seeing our governments for what they are by their support for this rogue state. I mean, even what happened at Eurovision, that was pretty dramatic, folks. Eurovision. Massive protest because there's this Israeli singing there. And you know, she comes out and says, oh, you know, it shouldn't be political, it's just all about music. And yet this woman had a song called October Rain, which was all about the October 7th event that happened in Israel involving Hamas. And she had to change the words of the song, had to change like six or eight words of the song, and then rename it to Hurricane and not October Rain, so she could even be allowed to sing it there. And by the same token, she's saying, oh, this shouldn't be about political views, it should be just about music. Unless she writes a song about the genocide, justifying the genocide that's going on in Gaza. And this woman, Eden Golan, her name is, like Eden Golan. Not much programming there, folks. Like, tell us the Golan Heights in Syria is Eden or something like that. I don't know. Stolen Syrian land, of course. But this woman, Eden Golan, she actually appeared as a representative for Russia in 2015. She's a Russian Jew. And she appeared as a representative for Russia in 2015 in the junior section when she was 12 years old. And then a year after that, in 2016, she appeared in the One World Music Awards or something for Crimea. And now in 2024, she's appearing for Israel in the Eurovision Awards. It's incredible how that works when you're a Jew. You can just change nationalities, move wherever you want, become a citizen of that country and perform for them. And then suddenly flip over and perform for Israel whenever you want. It must be nice to have those sort of privileges, hey? But that's what you get, I guess, when you're an Israeli. Nice looking rock wall up here, eh? I think the bay is right over there as well. Actually, we'll go and have a look. We might get to see Zadar Bay. And see what that's like. See what the view's like. It's a little windy, folks. That's why I didn't stay down where the sea organ was, because it's just too windy. I don't know if we can see the bay from here. I don't think so. But remarkable looking place, folks. You can see the remnants of socialism over there with the buildings. There's a lot of very socialist looking buildings here in Croatia, folks. It's not socialist anymore, but it certainly was for a while. But really good people. The people that I've met here have been really great. The talks have been excellent. There's been a really good turnout at all the talks, far more than I expected for any of them. And yeah, it's been great. It's been really good to see. And it's been a great experience coming here and doing all this sort of stuff. Heading down to Dubrovnik tomorrow. Gonna do a talk down there in Dubrovnik. And then we're heading over to Visoko in Bosnia. And I'm gonna do a talk at the location of the Bosnian Pyramid, which will be interesting. And then that's on Saturday. This talk in Dubrovnik is on Thursday. Then on Saturday, speaking at the Bosnian Pyramid. And then I think on the following Wednesday, Tuesday or Wednesday, going to be speaking at Gospic. And that will be the last talk that I'm doing in Croatia. And then towards the end of the month, I will be heading back to the United States and on to Mexico. And it's gone kind of quickly. It's been slow, but it's been quick as well. I mean, it's just weird now that there's only like less than 2 weeks I've got left here. It's kind of weird. I have some really sad news as well. My dear little cat in Mexico, the old bark cat that I've kept with me, as he's had abandonment issues and been left alone for so long. I left him back in Mexico with my housemates looking after him, and he died last night. Very, very sad, folks. He was only 3 years old. He died, apparently, of kidney failure, some form of cat diabetes or something, the vet said. But really, really sad, folks, that I've lost my dear little friend. He was my best friend in Mexico. We were pretty much inseparable. He used to follow me all around the place. And I feel really bad that I wasn't there when he died. He died on my chair. I took him to the vet, and the vet wanted to put him down there and then, but they didn't want him to do that. So the vet gave them some sedative for him. They took him home and they half sedated him so that he was out of pain. But he was aware enough to know where he was and know he was at home. And they put him on my chair in my office, and he actually died on my chair a couple of nights ago, night before last actually. Very sad, folks, very, very sad. I can't believe I'll never see the little guy again. Only 3 years old, way too young for a cat to die. And he was such a special little creature that anybody who'd come to the old bar or had visited me at my house knows this cat very well. His name was Pretty Boy. And no, I didn't name him, folks. That was the name that the previous owner gave him. I tried to change it many times, but Pretty Boy was what he would answer to. So I guess that's why I kept it. But Pretty Boy is no longer with us. Very, very sad, folks. Very sad. Something else that was brought to my attention as well is that someone had opened a GoFundMe page, or a Buy Me a Coffee page, sorry. The Crow House Buy Me a Coffee. I checked this page and it actually had 70 subscribers and had received several hundred dollars in donations from people. And this is not my page, folks. It's been closed now. I reported it and I put out a newsletter asking other people to report it, and it did get reported, and it was closed a couple of days ago or yesterday. And in the last 24 hours there'd been massive troll attacks on my BitChute channel by, you know, other channels with their names in all capitals and blah blah blah, all probably run by the same person, probably the person that was running the Buy Me a Coffee page, probably pissed off that we got onto them and closed the page. Pretty disgraceful, people doing stuff like that, you know, doing what they can to steal your donations and steal your work and just making money out of others. It's quite disgraceful, folks, what people do. Another park over there, probably connected to this one, but who knows. But yeah, so that's good that it's been closed down anyway, folks. And all those who reported the Buy Me a Coffee page, thank you very much for that. I appreciate the fact that you reported it, and I appreciate the fact that it's been shut down. It's very kind of disillusioning when you find pages like that, folks. And you find people that, you know, genuine people who really think they're supporting your work, and they're actually contributing to some sort of a pirate who's trying to steal your audience and steal your donations and basically have you shut down, you know. Very disappointing, very disillusioning to see this sort of stuff happening in the world, you know. If we had a little bit of honesty, it would be a great thing. And we don't seem to get much of that these days, we really don't. And like I said, folks, we're at a really crucial time. We're at a crucial time in history. I think that's all I got to say too, folks. I think that's all that's on my list. I mean, there's so much going on. Oh yeah, metal detectors in shopping centres in Queensland. All these knife attacks in Queensland and in New South Wales and in South Australia as well now. Knife attacks all over the place in Australia. And like I said, there's always knife attacks in Australia. There's always knife attacks in the UK. Knife attacks all over the place all the time. But now we're suddenly hearing about it in the news. So now they're putting metal detectors in supermarkets. So soon you're going to have to go through a metal detector even to get into a shopping centre because they want to protect you from knife attacks, of course. They're moving things rapidly towards a cashless society. And soon, I would imagine, people will be, you know, inconvenienced by having metal in their pocket. They'll be inconvenienced by carrying cash on them because it'll go off when they walk through the metal detectors. So it's another way of encouraging people not to take money with them. And just another way of inconveniencing people. The government's so good at inconveniencing people, folks. So they do roadworks at holiday time all the time. Like here in Zutta, there's roadworks all over the place. And it's a busy time of the year. It's holiday time here. And so they put roadworks in everywhere to slow people down, to make it inconvenient for you to go into town. They want to make it a hassle for you. So you think, ah, wouldn't it be better if everything was local? You know, they'll be able to push you towards their 15-minute cities a little bit more. This is what they want to do. Make everything inconvenient for you so that they can roll you into what they want, roll you into their cashless society. But like I said, I think the wheels are falling off everything, folks. I really do. And we need more people speaking out. I mean, honestly, this is why I don't do any more talks on ancient history and stuff. And I would love to get back to that. I'd love to be doing talks on ancient history, talks on Tartaria, talks on all sorts of stuff like that. I mean, it's such an interesting topic. But I don't, because I feel that if I were to do so, I'd simply be distracting people away from the clear and present danger that they're in. And honestly, I mean, if you're someone out there on YouTube or on BitChute or on Odyssey or on Rumble, and you have a large audience, and you're not alerting them to what's going on in the world, and not alerting them to the clear and present danger that we're in, and you're still just focused on ancient history and all this stuff, I'm sorry, but you're part of the problem. You really are. If you care about the world, and if you care about ancient history, and you want to be able to even go and investigate some of these places, you need to wake people up. You need to alert them to what's actually going on in their own backyard. Alert them to what their politicians are doing. Because soon you won't be able to go and visit any of these ancient places. They'll all be destroyed. They'll all be bombed out of existence. And people will be locked down into their 15-minute zone so they can't go anywhere. You know, there's a real responsibility at the moment with people who have an audience to alert their audience to what is actually going on in this world. I mean, we're in a, as I said, a state of clear and present danger. People need to see this. They really do. And you can help. Everybody can help. I mean, we can still stop this. If enough people get it, and enough people wake up, and enough people stand up, we can do this. We've got this. And it's really imperative that people get that focus. It really is, folks. You know, we don't want to be moved into this smart, cashless prison that they're creating. And we all have the ability to stop it. The main thing we need is public awareness of what's going on. So that wonderful word, no. You know, stop complying with your own slavery. Now we have an opportunity to do that. And everybody needs to do it. Everybody needs to step up to the plate, folks. You can see now that the UK, the United States, even Australia, all of these countries are vassal states of Israel, proxy states of Israel, proxy wars being fought by Israel through these different countries. When Israel carried out the 9/11 attacks on September the 11th, 2001, and blamed it on Muslims, and everybody knows that it wasn't. It wasn't some guy in a cave on dialysis operating all this from a laptop. This was a well-coordinated operation run by the CIA and Mossad. And everybody knows that. Anybody who's done any investigation into the 9/11 attacks knows that it was run by Israel. This was done to kickstart their war of terror and to rally America to go and take out Israel's enemies. And Israel, I mean, it's a state that was founded on terrorism and built on lies. The whole Holocaust narrative is falling apart. And without the Holocaust, they have nothing, folks. Without the Holocaust, they're just a bunch of grubby little frauds that you wouldn't want to have anywhere near you. The only thing that keeps them going is their holo-hoax narrative, which is a complete hoax, a provable hoax. Anybody who's actually visited the death camps in Germany and in Poland knows that this is a hoax. The death camps are not death camps. They never were death camps. As I pointed out to you, Red Cross figures, or not even Red Cross figures, just world population figures, show that in 1933 there were like 15,300,000+ Jews on Earth, and in 1948 there were 15,700,000+ Jews on Earth. So somehow during the period of the Holocaust, where we're told 6 million Jews died in death camps, and the world still hasn't recovered, the population of Jews is still not as much as it was in 1939, which is complete bullshit. Somehow during that period, the Jewish population grew by around 440,000 while there was supposed to be this Holocaust being waged. It wasn't, folks. It's a fraud. The whole thing's a fraud. Even the way Israel was set up was a fraud. Even the people that are in Israel, that they brought in there to make up the numbers they needed to have a viable state, you'll find most of them weren't even Israelis to begin with. Some of them were. Some of them were Jews, some of them weren't. But there was an awful lot of fraud and kidnapping that happened at that time in order to bolster the population into what they needed it to be. Kids playing in the park, folks, always a good sound. I mean, there's a video I'm going to have on at the end of this report I'll show you, which actually shows what it was all about and where a lot of the people in Israel came from, a lot of the children in Israel came from. Israel's been kidnapping children for many years. They kidnap Palestinian children. They sell their organs. But they also kidnapped a lot of Jewish children from other places, such as Yemen, and just different countries around the area, because there were a lot of Arab Jews there at the time as well. In 1948, when they first formed the illegitimate state of Israel, the rogue terrorist state of Israel, they didn't have the numbers they needed. Even with the Nakba, even with the migrants that came in from Europe, they didn't have the numbers they needed, and they didn't have the skills or the wherewithal to be able to really run the country the way they wanted. So they had to kidnap children from other countries and train them to do what they wanted. And there's a lot of evidence to support this, folks. And like I said, I want to include a video at the end of this which will explain that situation a little bit better. I mean, it's really important that people know what actually went on. It's really important that people see the clear and present danger that we're in. I mean, imagine if they push Russia into this conflict. And like I said, you know, they're going to do it anyway, I think, but they've got to do it in a way that is believable. If they can push this to the extent and the extreme they want to push it to, you're going to find so many people suffer, so many people die. The world is going to change dramatically, folks. And it's all due to our belief in authority. It's all due to our belief that the system is real. All due to our willingness to simply comply with the dictates of these criminal politicians that are running all of our countries. And it's imperative that people wake up and see what's going on. It really is. I mean, I have an enormous amount of faith in humankind. I really do. But if we don't stand up and take the matter in hand ourselves, well, then it's going to go where it's going to go. That's the problem. But the fact that everyone can see it, the fact that it's so blatant now, it's so in your face, all these 15-minute cities, all this smart grid, all of this constant warmongering, all the bullshit they're putting people through, I mean, it's so obvious now what's going on that, I mean, people should be able to see it. And hopefully people will take the opportunity to actually stand up for themselves and do something about it. I mean, it would be a good thing. It would be great if people would see what's going on and take the matter in hand themselves. But will they do it? That's the question. We can encourage them to do it. I mean, that's what I've been trying to do, just encouraging people to think for themselves, which would be great. They don't seem to do much of that anymore. That's what I've been doing with these talks, trying to encourage the Croatian people to think for themselves, stand up and take their country back. I think there's an opportunity to do that here in Croatia. It might be corrupt, but then all countries are corrupt. But they have a small enough population in Croatia to be able to get away with it. One guy said at one of my talks, you say that, or it's said that every country has its own mafia. Well, here in Croatia, the mafia has their own country. So, yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. But I still think there's enough good people here that they could make some sort of a difference. And it's the same for a lot of countries in Europe, folks. I mean, honestly, this might even be the last talk that I do, the last tour that I do of Europe, because of the world situation. I mean, it's really getting out of control. And if it does turn into war, then what are we going to do about it? I mean, how are we going to go back to anything that would be perceived as normal again? Maybe we will. Maybe it just has to happen this way. Like I've said, a lot of people are going to die from the jab. A lot of people are dying from the jab. The fact that AstraZeneca has admitted that they've been basically killing people. The fact that Bill Gates is still doing what he's doing. Still pushing the jab, still pushing the mRNA. Still saying they can create all sorts of stuff. They're now saying they can create a vaccine that's going to be good for any virus that comes along, even viruses they haven't discovered yet.
Seeds and acquisition and oncology, it is what it is, our new COVID. So we did what we did with COVID. We are very proud. We saved the world, but it is behind us now. We want to do once more, and I think oncology is our best chance to do it. But
oncology.
Of course, with many other therapeutic areas.
Okay, oncology, specifically what? And could that eventually be blockbuster drugs in that pipeline?
I think will be blockbuster drugs, and more importantly, they will be blockbuster drugs because they will have significant impact on cancer patients. We are having a phenomenal performance of the ADC portfolio that we acquire from Seagen. One of them, Padcev, which was, let's say, a medicine for bladder cancer, had a growth of 164% in our hands. So that demonstrates how well this money were invested. But what excites me most, Liz, is not how the current products are doing. Of course, I'm very happy because they are helping people. But when I review the pipeline, what is coming out of this ADC technology, I really think that we will move the needle into overall survival of cancer.
That is such music to so many of our viewers' ears at the moment, Albert. And props to the wonderful people at Pfizer. I know how hard they work over years to develop these kinds of drugs.
If people seriously believe this shit, oh yeah, we can put in this programmable mRNA into your body and we can get it to release whatever type of spike protein we need for whatever sort of virus that might come along, because that's what we can do with mRNA. But how would they do that if it's in your body? You just take this one vaccine, it's going to work for all future diseases. Well, it's because they can hit it with different radio frequencies and have it release different payloads, folks. That should tell you pretty well everything about what the plan is, you know? And again, when you look at all of this stuff and you tie it in with the experiments of Dr. Charles Morgan, showing you how that, you know, people can be controlled, they can be driven, they can be completely, all their memories replaced, I mean, just about anything you want through mRNA. It shows you what they're doing and what the plan is. Oh, by the way, they've got digital licenses now coming out in Australia, folks. I think it's South Australia. You're now eligible for a digital license. Don't get one of these things. Don't get anything digital. You've got to start throwing away all this digital shit. Throw away your smartphones, as I've been saying for many, many years. Or if you've got one, just don't take it with you when you go out. These things track and trace you everywhere. The smartphones are literally the gateway device that they use to track and trace you. But now they've got this jab into everybody, they probably don't even need the smartphones. They can do it without them. So, yeah, put all this tech down, folks. Put all this stuff down. So I'm a little vague today. I don't know whether this report's even going anywhere specific, but I'm a little vague today. I've got a lot on my mind. Pretty Boy dying has kind of messed me up a little bit. And like I said, I've got to go down to Dubrovnik tomorrow. And yeah, so it's kind of touch and go at the moment. But as I said, folks, we're in a state of clear and present danger. We really are. And it's so important that people pay attention. You know, there's a huge amount of people out there in the so-called truth movement or the alternate media or the alternate research community or whatever. If all of these people could just get a little bit of focus for the moment, put down their rabbit hole and address the clear and present danger that we are in, alert their audience to the fact that it's time for them to stand up and pay attention. It's time for them to get involved in their community, get involved in what their governments are doing. If people could do this, it would make an incredible difference, folks. And like I said, if you're someone out there who's ignoring this, well, it's not my interest. I'm more interested in ancient history, and I'm more interested in this, and I'm more interested in that. Well, pretty soon you're not going to be able to research any of that stuff because you didn't pay attention. You didn't deal with matters of state. You didn't deal with the people that are threatening your existence, killing you and killing your children. You didn't deal with it. And the opportunity is going to be missed. But imagine if all the people out there, I mean, there's millions and millions of people, folks, who listen to the alternate media, who listen to alternate research. If these people could all get some focus on the same thing and start looking at what our governments are doing and start seeing that they hold the key to healing this situation, then we could change the world. We really could. Imagine what would happen if all of these people got involved, folks. Yeah, and like I said, if you're someone out there who's saying, oh, it isn't my interest, well, I'm sorry, but you're part of the problem. As much as I love the research a lot of these people do, it's important that people see what's going on, and it's important that people stand up and address it. So, yeah, don't be part of the problem, folks. Be part of the solution. Anyway, I'm going to leave it here for now. Just a short video today. I've got a lot of stuff on my mind. I got a lot of stuff I need to go and do. I'll be back in Mexico early June. You'll be getting another couple of reports from me before I leave Croatia. I'm going to try to do a video from Dubrovnik when I'm there. I'll definitely do some sort of a video around the Bosnian Pyramid. I'll let you see that. But this is the end of today's report anyway. Like I said, I'm a little discombobulated. I've got a little bit on my mind. I'm probably not making a lot of sense with this report, but I figured I'd come and do it anyway, because it's been 5 or 6 days since I did one. And again, thank you to the people who support me. Thank you to the people who send me kind emails. Thank you to everybody who wrote in and reported the Buy Me a Coffee page. It has been removed now, which is really good to see. And thank you for everybody who did report that. And thank you to the people who even donated, thinking they were donating to me. I mean, it's a terrible thing, but thank you for doing that anyway. Anyway, folks, I'm going to leave it there for now. Again, have faith in yourself. And don't be afraid to step up and make your voice heard. I mean, it's really important that we do this, folks. We're at one of the most crucial times in history. We really are. And if people could get some focus, if the whole alternate media started addressing this problem and calling these politicians and these criminals out for what they are, we could change the world very, very quickly. A lot of people are listening to the alternative media now, folks, because, I mean, everything that we said through COVID, and they laughed at us and told us we were conspiracy theorists. Now AstraZeneca has admitted that their vaccine kills people. There's been so many people dying and so much shit happening that people can see it. People can see what's going on. So Now's the perfect time for you to stand up and for everybody to stand up. So, yeah, folks. But anyway, I'm going to leave it there for now. Thank you for joining me on this report. I'm going to leave you with this video talking about the foundation of Israel. And I think you'll find it interesting. And when it talks about white supremacy, yeah, there is a certain amount of white supremacy in the world, folks, or there was anyway. And most of that came from Jewish people. Same as most of the slave trade. Most of the stuff that's gone on in the world has been run by Jewish people, folks. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. You know, every war in the last 2,000 years, all the hardship and damage that we're seeing in the world today, the financial slavery that everybody is in, all of this comes from the one source. And it's becoming pretty obvious to people now. They've worked too quickly and they've played their hand too openly. And a lot of people are now seeing what the root cause of the problem is, folks. And so now's the time for you to stand up and make as much noise as possible. If people do that, then I think we got this. And I don't think they're going to win anyway, folks. I mean, the globalists are failing. They really are failing. They've gone too hard, too quickly, and people are getting it now. But anyway, folks, I'm going to leave it there for now. Thank you for joining me on this report. I'll look forward to speaking to you again soon. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.
You might have heard about children in Gaza going missing, kidnapped by Israeli soldiers. It's so evil, it sounds utterly absurd. But Israel's done this kind of thing before. I'm talking about a mass kidnapping that happened when Israel declared itself a state, when thousands of children disappeared and never returned. But they weren't Palestinian. They were Jewish.
It started as a rumor. Later on, it became a myth.
What is considered to be one of the largest cover-ups in the history of Israel.
This horrific crime and its cover-up tell us everything we need to know about Zionism and the core philosophy that's connected to every other colonial reality in the world. Let me explain.
Israel's independence.
It's 1948. Zionist militias have just razed hundreds of Palestinian villages, displaced 750,000 Palestinians, and declared Israel a state. At this stage, there are about 650,000 Jews living there. A minority were Palestinian Jews who'd been living there for ages, but the majority were recent settlers who'd moved to Palestine as part of the Zionist project. And most of these old-timers, as they've come to be known, were Central or Eastern European, or what's called Ashkenazi Jews. They pioneered the Zionist movement, made up the militias that orchestrated the Nakba, and served in Israel's first political parties and government. Now that they had succeeded in establishing a Zionist state, they needed to start filling it with more settlers.
They came from the displaced persons camps in Europe.
But all these European Jews weren't enough to colonize and work all the land that they had taken. If Israel wanted to be a viable state, it would need more Jews. So the Zionist entity had to look to the Arab world. See, there had always been Arab Jews living in Yemen, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco, Egypt, as well as in non-Arab countries like Iran and Turkey. But these Jews, Mizrahi Jews, as they'd come to be known, came from a very different context. Ashkenazi Jews had been facing anti-Semitism, pogroms, and persecution in Europe for centuries, which is the environment that gave birth to the colonial Zionist project and the feeling that there needed to be a Jewish homeland for Jewish safety in the first place. Mizrahi Jews, on the other hand, had been coexisting with their neighbors for centuries and were part of society. But the colonial creation of Israel ruptured these centuries-old relations, leading to Israeli rescue missions that airlifted them into the colony. And the story behind the huge covered-up crime this video is about starts with one rescue in particular. Operation Magic Carpet. Yes, that is the actual name.
Here is a place where a miracle occurred. 5,000 Jews escaping terror and slavery in the backward Arab state of Yemen.
Yemeni Jews weren't slaves. They were just poor, like most non-Jewish Yemenis were. In fact, Yemeni Jews had been living there for centuries and had chosen to move to Israel because they wanted to flee poverty and had bought into the biblical narrative. Meanwhile, in Israel, these Yemeni Jews were seen as unclean, primitive, backwards, and a threat to the European civilized image that Israel was trying to build. Ben-Gurion, Israel's prime minister at the time, had described Mizrahi Jews as rabble and would later say, "We don't want Israelis to become Arabs. It is incumbent upon us to struggle against the spirit of the Levant, which corrupts individuals and societies." But the Yemenis were still brought in. Why? One Zionist leader said that while Ashkenazi Jews were better suited for city work, Yemeni Jews would do well with agriculture because they, quote, need very little. They'd been tested already, decades before. Yemeni Jews had been brought in by early Zionist settlers when they realized they couldn't work the land well, and they had glowing reviews. Hence, Operation Magic Carpet. Israel took what was essentially the mass import of cheap labor and spun it into an Orientalist white savior story of rescue and redemption.
"And with each step you pass from the dark ages to the present century, from bondage to freedom."
This racist, supremacist attitude Ashkenazis had towards Mizrahi Jews sets the scene for what happens next. These are the absorption camps where almost 50,000 Yemeni Jews were sent once they arrived in Israel. Tent cities with awful sanitation, where their belongings were taken, they were secularized, and forced to adopt new Hebrew names, abandon their languages, and their culture. Ben-Gurion said, "The aim of the government is to inculcate the Yemeni immigrant with Israeli values to the point where he forgets where he came from." So Yemeni Jews were seen as people who needed to be civilized into the Israeli way of being, but at the same time, as a people who would, quote, never fully achieve modernity. This turned them into infants in the eyes of the Ashkenazi absorbers, thus taking over every decision regarding Mizrahim and their children seemed natural. That brings us to the kidnapping. Between 1948 and the early 1950s, thousands of babies disappeared. This happened to lots of non-European Jewish families, but the majority were Yemeni. It happened in several ways. When Yemeni Jews arrived at the absorption camps, their babies were taken from them forcefully to structures called baby houses, under the pretense that these places were in better condition than the unhygienic camps. And from these baby houses, many children disappeared. Or they disappeared from hospitals when taken there for routine treatment. There were also cases of Yemeni mothers giving birth, their child being taken away by a nurse, and then never seen again. Across each scenario, the story was pretty much the same. Parents were told their child had died, but were shown no body, no grave, and no death certificate. Many of these parents believed that their children had not died, but had been taken away from them, and put up for adoption, or sold to childless Ashkenazi couples. For years, these families campaigned for the truth and for justice, but were met with claims of myth and conspiracy. Decades later, some people were able to reconnect with their missing children through DNA tests.
After years of research, he found his biological mother, who was told, he says, that he had died during birth. He never told his adoptive parents he knew. They were Holocaust survivors.
Eventually, testimonies from those involved surfaced. One former senior nurse testified that Yemeni parents were not interested in their children, and that they should have been happy that their child got a good education. Another nurse told a Yemeni woman, "You have lots of children. Why not let us take one of them?" There are plenty of damning testimonies gathered by an NGO called Amram that suggest that this was systematic and widespread. And yet, three different government commissions over the course of decades claimed that most children had died and that there was no evidence the state was involved. During one of these investigations, requests for birth and burial records disappeared, reported to have been destroyed by fires or floods. That coincidence was not investigated, and hundreds of thousands of documents from that inquiry were then classified. Only in 2016 was this issue finally acknowledged at the state level.
White people met here colored people and were supposed to be the same nation. They saw them as a problem that needs to be solved. And part of the solution was to take the children out they will have a better life. Their identity will not be Middle Eastern. They will be sort of Europeans with dark skin.
It's a horrifying story, but it's not unique. Colonizers across the world have done this. From Australia to Canada, to Belgium to France, the forcible removal of children and their re-education is standard practice for colonizers. And it's because despite their distance and space from one another, all these places share one core philosophy, white supremacy. It doesn't matter that the Mizrahi Jews were also settlers there to colonize the indigenous Palestinian population. They weren't white, and that made them vulnerable to their own cultural genocide. The story of the Yemeni children speaks to the only core principle of Zionism that matters, that it is inherently racist and violent against Palestinians and Jews alike. Zionism was invented by victims of white supremacy as their own version of white supremacy, where they could hold top rank. This story is just one of many that shatter the myth of Israel as a utopia and safe haven for Jews. Mizrahi Jews were safe before, and endangered upon their arrival to the white supremacist colony that saw them as nothing more than a primitive labor force. And that's the other thing that needs to be mourned in this story, the identity of the Arab Jew. That's at the core of why they were looked down upon by European settlers. Because before being Jews, they were Arabs. The word Mizrahi, meaning Eastern, only serves to cover up this reality, that these were Arab Jews who culturally, linguistically, historically, had more in common with the Palestinians they were colonizing than the white settlers they were doing it alongside, or under. And so a system was born to keep them subjugated and dilute them of their culture, so they'd be far removed enough to see Palestinians as more of the other than the European settler who had always seen them as inferior. And so when we hear stories about Palestinian children being kidnapped in Gaza, this is not surprising. This is the extension and continuation of a long-held policy that the Zionist entity was built on.
Not good. Nobody has to tell you anything about it.